Welcome to In the Company of Women on AspiringMormonWomen.org. This is Allison Belknap, and this is In the Company of Women, a bi-monthly podcast hosted by AspiringMormonWomen.org. We bring you the stories of women of faith pursuing education and careers and working to realize their potential in a variety of settings. Today I had the pleasure to record a dinner table chat with friends in Washington, D.C. The conversation includes Wendy C. Tidwell Archibald, an assistant dean at the J. Reuben Clark Law School, Brigham Young University, her mother, Myrna Tidwell, a mother and grandmother from Idaho, Nate Dearden, Annette Thacker Bartlett, and Kirsten Hansen, all attorneys with the Washington, D.C. public school system. We talk together about varied experiences as we all attempt to prayerfully stumble through life as aspiring Mormon women. All right, so I am here in Washington, D.C. with friends and comrades and maybe former friends after we get done with tonight. All of whom are aspiring Mormon women in one way or another, and so this is very fitting for our podcast of In the Company of Women. So we have to my left, Dean Wendy Archibald. She's an assistant dean at the BYU Law School. She's waving as if this is a video. So Wendy's at the BYU Law School. She has been a professional trainer. She's got a JD degree. She has been a lawyer. She's got two beautiful girls and a husband who sings in the Tabernacle Choir. Good times. Mm-hmm. And one of her oldest daughters on a mission, like 20 minutes away. From here. Mm-hmm. And she's dying on that. Next to her is her mother, Myrna Tidwell. Myrna is a fantastic woman that I've just gotten the chance to make acquaintance with. And Myrna is the mother of 7 and 2 twins that you lost that were stillborn from Idaho, Nampa, Idaho. Is that right? So Myrna's here, there. And then to her left is Nate Dearden. Must have been the same one you did with your boyfriend.
Which one?
Sorry. What's your title, Nate?
Well, I don't. My title wouldn't really make sense, but.
Okay.
Maybe you could explain.
Nate, okay.
I work in the Division of Special Education at DC's state level education agency, so I do a lot of stuff with disability policy and a lot of stuff around the area of preparing kids as they're transitioning out of high school, so connecting to employment, post-secondary education, and independent living opportunities.
That was perfectly done. I could not have done that better. Annette is next to her, Annette Thacker Bartlett. Annette, your job's similar, yes?
It's true, yes. I work with Nate at the D.C. Office of the State Superintendent of Education, also in the Special Education Division. Most of my job consists of training school administrators and educators on their responsibilities to ensure that students with disabilities have their rights and get the services that they need to be successful in school.
Very cool. And then last but not least is Kirsten Hansen. Kirsten works in the same office with Nate and Annette.
Yes, and my team focuses on compliance, so I specifically investigate complaints that parents submit to our office and write decision letters on what we find.
Great. So tonight, I am fortunate enough to be literally in the company of really great aspiring Mormon women. So maybe we could just all chat a little bit about what do you think it means to be an aspiring Mormon woman, and what challenges do you see facing women getting education, thinking about careers, women who are on the flip side of that, have education and maybe have started careers and are facing the decision of maybe staying at home and raising children, and obviously topics I think that are close to all of us and that we've thought about a great deal. Some of us in this group are married, some of us are not, some of us have children, some of us don't. So it's a pretty good little spectrum of LDS women of faith. So maybe, Wendy, let's start with you. Your plan in life was always to become an assistant dean at the law school, right?
Yeah.
What was your plan in life?
I never had much of a plan except to go to college.
Go to college.
Yeah.
And you wanted to be a mom, didn't you?
I just assumed I would be a mom.
Okay.
It wasn't like, ooh, can't wait to be a mom.
Okay.
I just assumed it would happen because it was the only pattern I knew growing up.
Okay.
Everyone grew up and went to a year or two of college and got married and settled back on the farm and raised their family. That was pretty much all I ever saw.
Now, for the majority of women around this table, that pattern didn't play out. For the majority of us here sitting here, you went to a year or two of college and dated boys and then broke up with boys and then dated other boys and then went to law school and, right? So do you think that's familiar sounding, what Wendy said? You just kind of assumed you'd grow up, go to a couple years of college, get married?
Yeah, I mean, I think we come from the generation of Mormon women that were just these fabulous mothers, and they put their whole heart and soul into it, and so you grow up with this really fantastic mother who devotes and sacrifices everything for her kids. And so when I thought about what I wanted to be when I grew up, I thought I wanted to be this awesome, amazing mom just like my mother. And so that's just what I thought I would end up being, just sort of naturally around the same time she got married. I thought, oh, I'll probably get married around that same time. So I just didn't think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought education was important and loved being in school and always had plans to get a good education and even, you know, further higher education, even graduate school. I always thought I wanted to do, but I didn't think about how I'd actually live my life other than just being this totally dedicated mother.
So where did the decision come from to go to law school? Nate, was that something that was always in your plan?
I think maybe it was in my plan when I was like in fifth grade and I did mock trial or something. But no, I mean, I think we grew up when President Hinckley was a prophet and he would always talk about get as much education as you can. So I think I thought that I wanted to be a mom. That was my primary goal. But I also always wanted to go to graduate school. And I got to my senior year of college and I was trying out some different ideas, but nothing felt like the right thing. And I was doing a high school guidance counselor internship and I was kind of leaning towards that because I could have the summers off, it would be a good job with kids. And I kept thinking of all these graduate degrees that I could do with kids,
mm-hmm.
or that I thought mm-hmm. that were the best, whatever. And I had one friend who talked to me during that time and just really counseled me to choose to do something I cared about and was passionate about. And then I was actually dating somebody at the time and I was great friends with his dad, and his dad's the one who kind of encouraged me to look into law school. And when he first said it, I thought he was crazy because I had some friends who were preparing to go to law school, like, at that time, and they were all very competitive and going to, like, big-name law schools, and I just did not see myself like them at all. They'd all done internships in D.C. on the Hill, I think a week later, my mom brought it up again, and I never talked with anybody about it, and so I felt like that was some inspiration. And one of the things my mom brought up is just how it opens up a lot of different opportunities, an opportunity to make a good living for yourself, opportunities that then I could use to travel, or just broad career opportunities where you're not pigeonholed in one certain area.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I think that's when I took it seriously, but I don't think without like having some mentors kind of push me that direction, I would have found that direction by myself.
What about you, Kirsten? Was it always in your plan to walk this path?
No, I think when I finished college, which similar to the stories here, education or college was always stressed in my family. And so I always knew I'm going to college and I'm going to finish college. But then, you know, once I finished with my degree in geography, which I very much enjoyed, I realized my plan to be a mom or do whatever my husband's doing isn't happening, so I need to make a decision for myself. So I just started thinking about what options were available to me with my geography degree, and I thought law school would open up good opportunities. And because I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do.
What options are available with my acting degree?
Right. That's exactly. It's like I don't think I'm gonna be a geographer, so I thought, okay, I can do law school. And you know, that one's three more years before, right, I have to decide what to do. So.
Right. It gives you three more years to
mm-hmm.
decide.
Mm-hmm.
And now, Myrna, yours was a little backwards. You didn't expect necessarily to go to school And then you did. You went away to school, right? You thought you might stay locally and maybe do some school locally. Am I remembering the story right?
I definitely wanted to go to college.
Uh-huh.
And I was planning to go with friends in state.
Right, right. And then you left Idaho instead and
right.
went to the big metropolis of Provo.
And brought me into going to BYU with her. And
mm-hmm.
As a non-Mormon.
Yeah, so I wasn't a member, didn't know much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Went to church with her once at a little branch. We were really small town.
And then tell me about how your aspirations sort of evolved and what ended up happening. You're in a different stage of your life, but what ended up happening with how your aspirations were focused and directed?
You mean as far as when I first went?
Yeah, well, so you went to college. You wanted to be in nursing.
Right.
And then, but then your life kind of took a different path, right?
Right. So my very small high school did not prepare me for chemistry.
Uh-huh.
That was first chemistry class. I'm just like, I can't do this.
Right.
And I really couldn't. And so I really just went for general ed.
Great. And then you ended up getting married.
Mm-hmm.
Did you meet your husband at BYU?
Yes.
Okay. Ended up getting married.
Yeah, so he was a junior as well as the friend that took me, and we met right away and just dated off and on and had highs and lows. And
and the rest is history. The rest is history.
But anyway, when he finished, then we were serious. But we thought that he would go into the military because he had been deferred
mm-hmm.
for college. And thinking that as soon as he graduated, he'd be called up, we didn't know what to plan. But the government doesn't move that rapidly as a result.
Surprise, surprise.
Per usual. So so finally we just set a date and
jumped in with both feet.
Yes.
Right?
Yesterday, 59th anniversary.
59th anniversary yesterday. So, When did you meet Lyle in your, you know, your life experience?
Oh, my word. That's a lot of water under the bridge from talking about going to college.
I know, but I'm just saying, I'm just kind of establishing maybe where we are. But I know you went to college, so tell us a little bit about...
Well, I went to college, but I put myself through college. And so I went a year or two and said, oh, this is too much of an investment. I am finishing. Boys or not boys, I will finish this. And uh-huh. so I did. And then ended up moving to DC, had some opportunities here, and kind of just, I have just prayerfully stumbled through my whole life. So I have no
prayerfully
plan.
Prayerfully stumbled. That's perfect. I have prayerfully stumbled. I will attest to that too.
So, and then it became clear that I should serve a mission. And so I served a mission in Spain and moved back always thinking I would move back to DC, but I ended up in Salt Lake. It's a little closer to home, but not at home. And, worked for 3 years as the vice president of a tour company. So we took performing groups on tour internationally. Mm-hmm. You can see this is a very smooth path right to law school.
That's right.
Back to Spain.
And I got to travel internationally and a lot of crazy fun stories and hard work, but it was a great experience. And then in essence, God made me go to law school. And so I did, but I was about 30 when I started law school and had no idea why I was there or what I was going to do or what I was supposed to be doing. But I loved it. Nearly died in the process, like almost everyone does. Mm-hmm. But I did love it. And then my husband, like 6 weeks after I graduated, so I was almost 34. Mm-hmm. He was 32 when we met and then got married that same year that I graduated from law school. So...
Well, and that I think that sense of God made me go to law school, when we were talking last night, Myrna, I think, you know, I don't know if you said it this clearly, but it certainly felt to me like you were saying God put the pieces in place for you to be able to go to BYU to have the support, and you felt like that was very directed. And I think that's probably common with all of us here, is that there are, whatever step it is, if it's going to law school or whatever it is in our life, there are moments where we say, this is an instrumental thing that happened to me, and the Lord was certainly in the details in making that decision. Is that fair? Is that too big of an assumption to make for all of us?
No, absolutely. It's, for me to end up in, I met my husband out here in D.C. after I graduated from law school, and the reason I had come to DC is because I had done a fellowship there the summer before, and the reason I even knew that fellowship existed was because I was talking to a friend at a party in the middle of law school who told me about it, and it's just, you know, you trace backwards,
it's
and you
all
can
the
see
look back.
Mm-hmm. All mm-hmm. the little things lining up to just, that God's in the details, and that He has a plan for us, but we're not allowed to know what that is most of the time.
That's
until
right.
Until we look backwards.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
For me, it's been a balance between Heavenly Father leading me versus like what I need versus what I want. Like mm-hmm. I've always wanted to live in Washington, D.C. I applied to schools there for college, but felt better about going to BYU, always with the thought like, okay, well, if you do graduate school after, like you can like do the practical, less expensive college experience, and then you can, you know, do D.C. later. And after college, when I, you know, started thinking about what I wanted to do, I again applied to a lot of law schools in Washington, D.C., and got accepted to the one I wanted to go to most, but just didn't feel right about the decision. And I applied to BYU as well because it's a good school, and I just really felt directed back there. And I thought, no, I've already done Provo. I do not want to go back there. And it was a really hard decision. And then finally, when I, you know, was finishing law school and again trying to figure out what it was I was going to do, I finally felt like, not that DC was a place I had to be, but that if I wanted to do that, to move forward with it, and my father would help me make it happen. So
that's great. So, you know, a thought comes to me, a couple of different thoughts that maybe I'll just throw out there and see what the response is. One is, as women in the LDS church, I think we sometimes have expected aspirations and unexpected aspirations or unvoiced aspirations. And I think part of the discussion, see if I can, I'm not sure if I can frame this right or not, but I think part of the discussions that happen about women in the church and some of the difficulties that sometimes women have in the church is that there is an expectation of us that we are going to aspire to become a certain thing, which would be a married woman with children, I think. Is that fair enough to say? I mean, I think that's assumed to be a common aspiration.
Not
right.
just a married woman with children, but one who also blogs and uses Pinterest to show off
that's right.
how talented we are at being a wife and a mother.
And how perfect mm-hmm. our house mm-hmm. is. And,
yeah.
But very few of us know people, I think, who are actually followed that exact path, but we've got this kind of created in our head. So how do we all around this table in our different aspects of life, what do we do to feel satisfied, feel happy with our lives, feel good about where we are and about who we are, rather than just compare ourselves to some, perhaps in some ways, fictionalized ideal and feel distraught about what we're lacking in trying to become that ideal? Where do you find the strength to say, this is who I am, this is what the Lord wants me to be doing? Where does that come from?
I had this moment when I was in my very early 20s, and I was thinking about life and thinking about, you know, why are we not supposed to be in the workforce? And I had this idea in my mind that women, that somehow it was wrong to be working when you had kids, that somehow that was doing injustice to your children. And I had this thought come to my mind that I thought, okay, hypothetically speaking, what if all of the jobs in the entire world were only done by men? And then it just hit me. I thought, wow, the world needs women to be working and contributing to society and holding leadership positions. And it just, I couldn't imagine a world where it was only run by men. And we've seen societies where things are only run by men and how it's played out over time, and it has not been good. And so at that moment I thought, I want to contribute to the world somehow. And I didn't know how that would look. And years later in law school and working in the field and also in my career as a teacher before I went to law school, I had a lot of moments where I thought, oh, I am fulfilling one of the things that God wants me to do. He wants me to be out there in the world. He wants me to be contributing and using my influence as a woman to make the world a better place. And when I reflect on that, even now, today, when I think, I have a lot of days, I've been trying to have children for a while and I don't, and some days I think, oh, I just want to be having kids, what am I doing in my cubicle? And then I have other days where I think, this is amazing, this is an incredible opportunity to be working in the world on something I feel passionate about and just contributing, and on those days I do feel really satisfied.
That's great.
I think I I just turned 30 this fall, and so I've, you know, been looking back, reflecting on my 20s, and I'm just so grateful for the opportunities I have had to go to law school and work and all these things that I don't think I would have aspired to on my own had I gotten married in college. I don't think I was very ambitious, but I do believe in using my time well, and so I think by not being married, I've kind of been pushed to do these other things, and I just kind of wish the conversations we would have more now is how to be more fulfilled as a person, and if you want children and have that opportunity to incorporate that into your life, but not to feel like it's either or.
That's right. I agree with that. Now, the thought comes to me, Myrna, your husband was a dairy farmer, is that right?
That's what he planned to be when he went to college.
Well, didn't you have a dairy farm? No, I'm wrong.
No, well, it hadn't become a dairy farm.
Okay.
His family bought a farm when he was 8, and he always planned to go to college. His brother went as well. And the brother cared nothing about the farm. But my husband and his dad wanted to set up a dairy.
Uh-huh.
So that's what he majored in college. That's what he went for. And then came back to the farm to do that.
So on the farm, you weren't out ever working at all, right? I mean,
no, that was me.
There,
that's true.
There was no work to be done on this farm, right?
No, there was plenty of work. They built the barns. They literally built huge hay storage barn and then the milk barn. And, you know, they built things and went for that. However, hepatitis came along, a really severe case for my husband.
Uh-huh.
And that really changed things because he was not able to do as much as needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And we were starving.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, we were barely making it with just a few cows. And so So as he studied, we both studied his really short patriarchal blessing, suddenly some bold print came out, and it was like he would influence others through education. And he had never considered being a teacher, but due to that, as we thought about it, it's like summer's off, vacation times, 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Really silly hours, because that didn't prove out. But we knew that was the right thing to do. And he had gone his first year to a local college and the other three at BYU. So he could take correspondence courses, which were all on the old typewriter those days. But he was one of those really disciplined people that will do that and finish. You know, once you start, if it's the thing, you do it. And so he did, and then when he needed his student teaching, then he had the local college that he could just go through.
Oh, that's great.
To be placed for student teaching.
That's
and
great.
He liked it a lot. He even did a little in administration and didn't care for that.
Mm-hmm. Would rather be in the classroom.
So then he taught high school then.
Oh, that's great.
For like 30 years. But we always were on the farm. We always did farm things.
That's great.
It's not always great as a kid in high school to have your dad be one of the teachers.
Mm-hmm. Especially when he's your earth science teacher.
So I guess part that discussion and that idea of how do we find ourselves and find our foundation and our happiness without, you know, when there's sort of this ideal that's in all of our minds, kind of leads me to maybe that we can talk about last, which is this. How would you categorize the role of women, quote unquote, in the kingdom of God? What is the role of women? What does your role entail? If you can be personal enough to share what it means to you personally.
I may be way out there, but I'm not so much one to say this is what women do and this is what boys do and this is what girls do. And and I never have, and I'm sure it's because of my upbringing, because I was right there with the boys hauling hay and milking cows and doing all the farm work, and they were in the kitchen making food or cooking or washing dishes, whatever. So it was very egalitarian in my upbringing, even though my parents were very traditional role models and everyone around me really was. So I didn't realize that that was the lesson sort of being ingrained. But as I say, I've just pretty much prayerfully stumbled through my life. And as I, because I'm older than most of you here, so as I teach young women or talk to anyone, I just say, the most important thing you can do is figure out how to communicate with the Lord and get his direction for you. And if people have pushback about what I'm doing in my life, I just say, you know what? You have a question about why I'm coming to law school? You take it to the Lord, because he directed me to come here. And if you want to question his direction, go right ahead. Be fascinated to be in part of that conversation, but it's not up to you what I do. And at the end of my life, I will only answer to him. I won't answer to anyone else about whether or not I fulfilled the mission I came here to fulfill. And so I guess that's where I just come down with that. And what I wish we would all do as women is let each other find that path and do what that is and be supportive and stop dealing from, like, looking at life from insecurities and assuming what other people are thinking about you. Stay-at-home moms assume that working moms look down on them, and working moms assume that stay-at-home moms are judging them. And I'm sure some of that does happen, but mostly we're sisters. And so if we would lift our eyes from our own navels long enough to see what we can do as a force for good in the world, I think we would all be overwhelmed. So that's kind of where I just go, roles. Yeah, of course. Being a mom, one of the greatest things I've ever done in my life. But it's not the only thing I've done with my life.
That's right.
Being a wife and mom, best things I've ever done. But they're not the only things I've ever done. And they're not the only things I'll ever do. And that's true for almost everyone, except maybe my mother, who had children for 23 years.
Well, so. And you're a different kind of mother. I mean, you're a different kind of mother than I am. You're a different kind of mother than your mom is. We're all, and there's a lot of, I want to point out, there's a lot of head nodding going on around this table, and I'd love to have other people jump in. I think that that value of the idea that in our church we do teach the ideal, because in some ways we have to, and some of our ideals I think we have constructed ourselves, but we also have to find our own path. And it's our uniqueness that gives us strength, and I think gives the church strength as an extension of that, is through our diversity of who we are and what our life experience is. Has that been your experience, Nate? Do you feel like that's played out in your life? Do you feel...
She's nodding yes.
She hasn't spoken enough. This is my...
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what Wendy's saying. I think... It's that whole just personal revelation and really, like, using your patriarchal blessing and using, like, developing that relationship with Heavenly Father to determine where you need to be. And yeah, I totally agree with, like, my relief society right now is just, we're in D.C., so a lot of women in the ward are very career-minded and have big professional positions, and then there's also a lot of women who are new moms, and I love coming to Relief Society and listening to what people share, because the thing that brings us together is our testimony of Christ and the atonement. And it's been a great ward to be in, because there isn't a big divide between working women and non-working and things like that, where maybe some other wards I've been in, it's been a little more pronounced just because of culturally, like, there aren't as many women doing one thing or the other. But it's been really great here that I feel like we're all on equal footing and we are trying to support each other. And so we love helping out when the new baby's born, you know, the single sisters in the ward, we love helping watch kids or make meals and vice versa. Like, people love listening to us complain about dating and whatever. We just try to support each other as sisters.
And I think that's so key. I think that's key for anyone who is a woman, Mormon or not, aspiring or not, is just that, that we make that realization that we're sisters, that it's not this is the right way and that's the wrong way, or you know, that she has everything and I haven't had everything I wanted. That we just say, we're sisters, and we reach out across those differences to give each other love and support in whatever our mortal circumstances might be.
And here's the way I see it about after this life too, right? Eventually, when it comes to motherhood, eventually, you know, in the slush of kingdom or however it all ends up, everybody's going to be grown up. All our kids, our babies, our children, they're going to be adults, and they're going to have their, you know, their...
Yep.
And we're all just going to be peers.
That's right.
At the end of the day. There's not going to be motherhood then in the sense that there is now of this raising of children on this earth. There'll be other types of motherhood, but as far as our roles, I mean, so we, if we're preparing for the next life, we have to prepare ourselves for what we're going to do in the next life. And we're not just going to sit around and change diapers. I mean, we're going to be relationships with each other like sisters in Zion. Like,
that's
like
right.
We just talked about. So that's something to think about.
And I think it's that self-development of leadership qualities, whether those are developed, whatever setting those are developed in. You're getting qualities of leadership, of patience. I guess really the qualities of that we, what is it, Peter, that lists, is it in Second, First Peter that lists the qualities of...
Divine nature?
Yeah. Hmm. Is that what it is? Is it in Peter?
So.
I can't remember. But that you have faith, and add to your faith knowledge, and to knowledge virtue, and to virtue tolerance, and to, you know, and all the way up to charity. Mm-hmm. And I think it's whatever setting we're in that we're developing those qualities, those divine qualities that will fit us for the kingdom more appropriately. Well, thanks for letting me interrupt our little dinner and do some recording. I really appreciate it. If you guys had one thing you wanted to say at the end of this little podcast, so you have this audience of men and women listening, anything you would want to say to everybody?
Well, but you asked at the beginning of that last question about how we felt about men and women standing in the church, and I just think that it is so equal and just so different, and that's what it's all about. And it's everybody's path is different to, you know, because if we're here to be tried and tested, then the tests have to be custom made, and they are. And some are from our own mistakes in judgment that we make and choices that we make, and others I think are just set up and then see how it goes from there.
Yeah.
And since I haven't always been a member of the church, I joined the church just before I was 19, and so, you know, my upbringing was, maybe it was completely different.
Right.
I didn't aspire to any particular thing other than I wanted to go to college.
That's right.
And, but then my path became clear.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't always clear as I went along.
That's right.
But certain things were, and I did work out, but everything was based on how I felt about it. If I knew that that was the right thing, then it was. And otherwise, it was all to the benefit of my family, because that's where all of my focus has been.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, other than the church and
right.
Everything that is
right.
Cups. So I have never felt lesser, you know, like I say, we all learned each other's jobs.
That's right.
And if whenever we mentioned about the bathroom and the boys, well, the boys got clean bathrooms.
That's right.
Same.
That's right.
Which I'm sure, you know, the girls did more of that than they did, because they'd spend hours bucking hay, and the girls did not do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it wasn't the same.
Wendy
amount.
Looks rolling her eyes.
Well, hoeing a garden is not the same as growing hay bales.
We have different memories, Mom.
any parting words of wisdom from anyone? Or all each of you can have a turn.
I would say that it was totally worth waiting an extra 10 years longer than my life plan said to get married, to be able to be married to a man that truly sees me as an equal. I think 10 years ago, I don't know that I was looking for that. Mm-hmm. Maybe I would have stumbled upon it, but I mean, to those women out there who aren't married yet, it's absolutely the best thing you could do is to marry someone that treats you as an equal, expects you to pull your weight, expects everything out of you as they would of themselves, and that's just been a huge blessing in my life. So that would be my advice.
Great. Kirsten?
I would say to just make sure you're enjoying what you're doing at the moment, and there's good and bad with every path your life takes, and to just make sure you're appreciative of what you have, and don't compare where your friends are at in their lives or other things, because I think we're all being led to the same place, and that's back to our heavenly parents, and just trust that you are being led on the best path for you to get back there.
Excellent. Wendy?
Good luck prayerfully stumbling along.
Yeah, I have to say. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Sure appreciate it.
Bye.
Thanks, Allison.
I'm Allison Belknap, the host of In the Company of Women. Today, we heard from Wendy Archibald, Myrna Tidwell, Natae Dearden, Annette Thacker-Bartlett, and Kirsten Hansen. Thanks to these remarkable women for sharing this time with us. Our editor this month was Juan Mijares, a second-year student at BYU Law School. Maren Belknap is our composer, musician, and music producer. Please join us in March for the next episode of In the Company of Women.